Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. This sublime music is the orchestral prelude to a real incredible masterpiece by Giancarlo Menotti called A Mall and the Night Visitors, an opera that was experienced by the world for the first time on television on Christmas Eve, 1951. And over the years, it has become a beloved classic. At certain points in time, the most often performed of any operatic score. And, of course, its very, very touching story, penned by Mr. Menotti himself, is a really engaging, moving story of a Christmas miracle entering the lives of a poverty-stricken young woman and her son with an unexpected visit from the splendid three kings on their way to Bethlehem. Here today to talk about them all in the Night Visitors, first of all, James Schatzman, who is Artistic Director of the Choral Arts Society, and they are in the midst of a banner year of very exciting offerings in celebration of a special anniversary. And what is the anniversary again?
It's our 30th anniversary.
Yes, 30th anniversary season for this wonderful organization. And one of the things they decided to do is a work which they've done at several different points in their history, this Christmas opera, Menotti's A Mall and the Night Visitors. And so we are really, really excited to have with us today not only the young man who is performing the role of A Mall this year, but we also have live in the studios two previous A Malls in performances with the Choral Arts Society, Mike Weideberg and Nathan Engstrom. And via the telephone, we hope in a few minutes we'll be speaking to a third A Mall, who was part of a choral arts performance of some years ago, Brett Angel, way back in, I think, 1991. Mm-hmm. So past and present and future Amals are on hand for this very special edition of The Morning Show. We welcome all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have all of you here. It's really fun. The first person I saw this morning was Mike, who walked in quite early, and I set eyes on him. He towers above me, and yet I vividly remember him as A Mall, and I remember you sitting in this very chair, talking about A Mall back before your voice had changed and so on. And Nathan, a similar experience, but more recent. And of course, Ty, I'm just getting to know for the first time with this conversation. Again, we welcome all of you. Jim Schatzman, say a quick word about why A Mall and the Night Visitors has figured so prominently in the history of the Choral Arts Society. There are plenty of choral organizations who probably wouldn't go near an opera for any particular, there's no particular reason to do a Mall in the Night Visitor. So explain why it's been such a prominent part of the Choral Arts Society's history.
I think part of it is just being the benefit of me being the artistic director. I get to do things that I really love. And this is one of those pieces that was very important to me when I was young. It ran every year on the television from 1951, the year it was written, all the way till 1966. And so I saw it several times in my youth. And it also played prominently in my wife's understanding of how music fits into the world. She watched the second version, the first taped version that was done in the 60s. And it was featured a young Armenian boy. And as a member of the Armenian church, everybody was talking about it. There was just such buzz in the Armenian community we're seeing. So everybody in the church watched this production. And it was her first experience of opera, as it was for millions of people. I think they broadcast it over 30 affiliates. It was the largest opera broadcast ever to date in history. And so it made quite an impact, and I saw it several years in a row. And so it was, and I was only in kindergarten and younger. So this is really a formative experience for me, and it's stayed with me. And as I've performed it, now this is the fourth time that I've conducted it. It just continues to grow more dear and more dear. It doesn't wear out. It's like a lot of the great operas. You just can't wait to do it again when you're finished.
Right. I grew up watching that very same opera. We watched it every year it was on. And I think one of the things that made such a deep impact on me was the fact that I think it was one of the first times it occurred to me that a child could live in poverty. And I guess I had maybe the vaguest notion that there are poor people in the world, but I guess I pictured hobos living under bridges or older people living in trailer parks or something, but I didn't picture a little boy living in poverty. I just could not imagine, and that's such a central theme of this story. I'm just curious, with both of our past Amals who are in the studio, and we're going to join Brett by telephone in just a moment, what acquaintance, if any, did either of you have with this opera, with the Mall and the Night Visitors, before presumably the phone call came or the email came or however the invitation came for you to sing the role? Had you ever heard of this opera, seen it, or knew anything about it? This is Mike first.
Me personally, no. I hadn't heard anything about it. And even in the future, talking to other people about it, didn't seem as well known for my generation as much as the older generation. So yeah, I had no acquaintance with this whatsoever before I started learning it and was asked to do it by Pat Badger, I think, after the auditions. And I have to say, it's definitely stuck with me, at least the melodies more so than the complete story, but it's made a pretty big impact for me musically.
Right. In some ways, I'm amazed that you would say yes to an undertaking if you didn't, or maybe that's why you did, because you didn't know what you were getting into.
No, I had no idea.
Wow. You're just a very obedient young man. How about you, Nathan? Did you know anything about a Mall before this all started?
I did not either. I remember Mrs. Badger also approached me, and she said they were looking for somebody to play a Mall. And the first thing that popped to my mind when I heard the title A Mall and the Night Visitors, I thought it was an actual, like, mall, like a place you go and buy stuff, and there were visitors there. It was going to be some, like, spooky thing in the night, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. So that was my first impression of A Mall and the Night Visitors, but I'm really glad that I did it, because I think it had a big impact on me. And when you're in seventh grade doing a mall, a musical work of that capacity, and seeing professionals work around you, that's a lot to take in, especially when, music is such a big part of what I do and what my family does, and being able to be around professionals like that at such a young age and learn that kind of a music and be a part of a process like that, it's super meaningful.
Cool. And then how about you, Ty? You are the current Amal, and we should probably also mention, is that okay that we mention, that you also are the grandson of James Schatzman, the distinguished gentleman sitting right next to you and the conductor of these performances. You're his grandson. But when, I guess he probably asked you if you wanted to do this, had you ever heard of Amal and the Night Visitors? Did you know anything about this?
Actually, yes, I have heard of it. Like, I was basically, I was, like, just looking at the internet about, like, famous opera studios, and I was just looking through some mall. I saw other ones, like, Phantom of the Opera and stuff like that, but never really heard a mall, like, musically.
So you'd seen the title, but you didn't really know what it was all about.
Yeah.
So, well, very good. Well, we're glad all of you, for one reason or another, answered the summons of, in your case, is Pat Badger, who, of course, taught music at Prairie for so many years and has been deeply involved in all of these productions. We're going to bring Brett Angel onto the air in just a moment via the telephone, but I want to have us listen once again to the very opening of the opera, this time not just orchestrally, but also with that beautiful singing that occurs between the mother and her young son, Amal. This comes from the original recording of Amal and the Night Visitors, so this would be the two singers who originated the roles of the mother and Amal, namely Rosemary Coolman as the mother and young Chet Allen in the role of the shepherd boy, Amal. So here is a portion of the very opening of this opera, and this is from that original recording conducted by Thomas Shippers.
She's so dramatic.
Yes, we're seeing smiles of recognition from all of the young men around the table here. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today about the beloved Christmas opera Amal and the Night Visitors of Giancarlo Menotti. Here in the studios, James Schatzman, who is conducting this weekend's performances of Amal, his grandson Ty, who is going to be performing the role of Amal. With us in the studios, two past Amals, Mike Weideberg, who performed this role in 2000 and 2001 with Choral Arts, and then Nathan Engstrom, the most recent Amal, who was Amal back in 2011. And now joining us via telephone, because he's just, I think, dropped off his kids at daycare or something like that. There's a thought that our Amal is dropping off his kids at daycare, is Brett Angel. And Brett is joining us via telephone, and he is going to be on hand for tomorrow night's first performance, as will Nathan and Mike, for a real special talkback. Brett, are you still there?
I am. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Glad to have you here. And Mike and Nathan and Ty and James Schatzman are all here as well. Brett, I want to ask you the same question that I asked both Mike and Brett and Ty, for that matter. Namely, when the invitation first came to you many, many, many years ago now, to sing the role of Amal, had you ever even heard of this opera? Did you know what you were getting into? Go ahead, Brett. Oops. Brett, did we lose you?
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no.
Okay, we will try to get him back in just a second. I don't know what happened. Okay, well, hopefully we'll get the answer to that question of Brett. We know he's alive and well at any rate. Let's get back to kind of the task of this score and learning it and performing it and just how difficult this music is. Jim, let's start with you, but then I think our Amals should chime in with just how modern is this score? How challenging is this score, just from a musical point of view?
Well, it's pretty sophisticated. I mean, I think that both Nathan and Mike referred to the fact that this was something they really didn't know. It's got to be incredibly rare for any 12 or 13-year-old to actually have an opera resume. And this is really an opera. There's recitative, which is a fairly sophisticated skill you often learn in college. And then there are some substantial arias, and as they have mentioned, singing with professional opera singers for the first time in their lives. So when you first dive in, I don't think, as a performer, I don't think you really understand what you're getting into. And then you realize the music is fairly difficult, although Menotti wrote this in a way that's and not only accessible to the listener, but accessible to the singer. It's brilliantly written so that the lines are very intuitive. And so although there's difficulty, and it's a modern score, there are a lot of, you know, very stacked chords that, where you don't just get a triad coming at you. They're more complex. The lines are extremely intuitive. And so you work this score just a piece at a time, and those melodies go very deep. Mike said earlier, too, that he still remembers the melodies. More than the story, he remembers these tunes just stay in your head. And I think that's part of the love I have for this, is that those tunes just stay with you. They really are beautiful, well-crafted tunes. And so although it has a certain difficulty in that you are singing opera, it's very disciplined. You're singing with an orchestra, which is very different than with a pianist who can adjust if something goes awry. Mm-hmm. You know, an orchestra has its regimen, and once they go, they're not going to adjust. So you have to be very disciplined about how you sing this. And I have to say that in each of the Amals that I've worked with, it's always impressed me how disciplined they can be when they've never sung with an orchestra before. For all three of them here in the studio, and I imagine for Brett as well, this was probably the first time they sang with an orchestra. Certainly the first time they sang solo with an orchestra.
Wow.
And so how this always works, there's a certain element that, to me, that almost feels magical. You do the work, and you stay in, and you really do that. But once the orchestra fires up, it's a different beast. Mm. It really is different. And so it takes a young man with a certain intellectual capacity, a certain musical savvy, and a certain kind of recklessness. They're able to just throw themselves into the score and just do it and not worry about what might go wrong. And I think that's a characteristic these four young men all had.
Hmm. Very good. What are your recollections of learning this score from just a musical point of view, even before we get to sort of the drama and theater of it? And how did you go about learning the score? This is Mike.
Well, like Jim was saying, I don't know, at that age, at least for me, I wasn't really thinking. I think when you get older, you get two in your head. But at that age, it's almost at the perfect point where I was singing enough that I knew, you know, I knew technique a little bit. And then I wasn't far enough along to get in my head and be scared to learn all these things. It's kind of just, you just jumped into it.
Ignorance was bliss.
Yes. It was, and I don't actually recall learning it that much. It's been like 15 years, I think. So it's more like I remember the performance of it, but I'm sure that it just took a really long time.
And would it have been, for instance, would it have been Pat Badger that taught you this, or your piano teacher,
sure,
or just you? Or?
My mom and I probably practiced a lot because she was in the choir at the time. She actually performed with me and the rest of the cast. And I think that it was probably me and my mom mostly. And that's probably how I came to learn the entire score.
Right. Nathan, how about you? You're also you also have a great musician as a parent. So did she have anything to do with you learning this?
Yeah. My mom helped me a lot. But I remember, I know at least once or a couple times I was driven over to Jim's house, mm-hmm. and we worked through the score together, because I did find it difficult, and there's a lot of talk, too. It was like, oh, you're just on the brink of your voice changing, so we've got to make sure you get the high notes. And I remember feeling a little bit of pressure about that. I'm like, I got to hit a G the first note I come out. And, you know, it was great one day, and then it wasn't the other day. So it was a little nerve-wracking there. And I was like, man, I got to pull this together. But, yeah, some of the lines I do remember sitting there and working out the recitative and that being difficult and trying to keep that line. But, yeah, it was difficult. But I remember I worked hard, and I got it under my belt. And then in the performances, I felt that I knew the music well enough to be able to act and to present it to the audience. But, yeah, I remember it was a little bit of a struggle.
Right. Yeah, puberty is kind of the enemy of all. You don't want puberty to invade it just at the wrong time. Ty, has your grandpa taught you this role, or otherwise how have you gone about learning this?
Mostly my grandpa and my grandma usually help me, since, like, other than them two, I don't think there's really anyone else that knows, like, 4 years' worth of music.
We work together pretty regularly. I would say 2-3 times a week we worked, and Ty's grandmother also is a good pianist, and so she was able just to sit down and work notes with him as well. And then we both have done some theater, so we would talk character over the dinner table, probably more than he wanted to talk about it.
Well, I'm glad you did. That's what it takes to really be a convincing them all. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of the music, of the score, and I think we're going to have Brett back with us on a landline this time around. So this is actually the music that gets played as the Three Kings walk into the set for the very, very first time. And maybe we'll hear just a little snip of the Shepherd's Dance as well. Again, we're exploring John Carlo Menotti's A Mall and the Night Visitors on WGTD's Morning Show. The March of the Three Kings from A Mall and the Night Visitors. And now I believe we have back with us Brett Angel, who is another alum of A Mall and the Night Visitors. Brett, are you there?
I am.
Great, great. On a nice, clear landline, we appreciate you joining us. Brett is actually the oldest of the A Malls. Brett was in A Mall and the Night Visitors way back in 2001.
1991.
Oh, 1991, farther back yet. Yes. Yeah, 1991. I should remember. I was the milk year, I think.
Yes.
So Brett, first of all, let me ask you a couple questions that we've asked our previous Amals already. First of all, when you got this invitation to undertake the role of Amal, had you ever even heard of this opera before?
I hadn't. I was 10 years old. And I wasn't familiar with it at all, and I just remember wondering to myself why, you know, trying to think of a reason why not to do it. Of course, there wasn't one easily accessible, and so I just kind of jumped into it, and to see what would happen.
And it sounds like something good happened. How did you go about learning this role, and what did you think about the score as you started digging into it?
Well, again, I think at the time, I don't remember studying it from the perspective that I imagine most performers would as they get older and they get more familiar with music, with scores, with the acting side of it. You know, when you're 10, it's I think it's fun to do something new. I think you're willing to accept challenges and do something different. I didn't have a frame of reference necessarily. It was the only opera, still to this day, I've ever performed in. So I just remember it being fun, being something different, being a challenge, and looking forward to the actual performance.
Who taught the score to you?
So I remember practicing at least 3 days a week. I mean, maybe it was even 5 days a week, but at least 3 days a week for hours on end with Phyllis.
Phyllis Mount.
Phyllis Mount, exactly right. And our homes were perhaps two blocks away from each other, so it was very convenient and efficient. I could walk to her home after school, and we could practice as often as necessary. And she did the accompaniments on the piano, and I sang. And I remember getting lots of hard candies after each practice with the idea of keeping the throat coated with sugar, which was a very welcomed thing as a 10-year-old.
Right, very good. So let's talk a moment about kind of the theatricality of this, and I'm directing this to all three of our past Amals and our present Amal as well. First of all, maybe when you're 10 years old or 12 years old, you don't even think about things like who is Amal and what kind of character is it. Maybe you just sort of play yourself, or do you remember trying to think about who is this character and who am I supposed to be and what does he represent? I mean, did you think about it in any of those kind of weighty, sophisticated terms? Or did you just kind of dive in theatrically the same way you sort of did musically? This is Nathan.
Yeah. I remember I knew that this story was connected to the biblical three kings, and I knew that I've been told that this was kind of their stopping point on the way to meeting the baby Jesus. And so I knew there was some kind of weight there. I was like, wow, this is a biblical thing that I'm acting in. And I do remember my older sister, she's 4 years older than I am. She is also, she does opera. She's studying vocal performance at Madison. And so I had always been around her when she had been acting. So I had some sort of a knowledge of, you know, how to kind of enter into a character or to try and capture what a character is supposed to be. So I do remember toying with that and trying to show, you know, it is easy being, maybe I was 11, I can't remember exactly what age I was, but being young enough, it is natural to play a role like that. You're just a kid, you know, you're just a shepherd out there. You kind of play yourself a little bit. But
getting bossed around by your mom.
Yep.
not doing what you're told.
Exactly, yeah. But, yeah, I do remember having some sense of, you know, this is a biblical thing. I remember thinking of that, you know, this performance was important and it was significant. So I think that kind of brought me into the mood of the opera.
Right. So, Mike, do you have any recollections of thinking about the theatrical side of this and the character of Amal very much?
I don't think it was conscious, but I think it's a pretty intuitive character when you're that age, when you're a child and you have a good relationship with your mom. You know, it's pretty easy to jump into. I do remember watching the film, I think, and that's I think I was just doing more imitation than anything. I don't know if I actually thought about the character so much. I think it was just the character of Amal so intuitive that you don't really, you know, what's the depth there? It's really just you're a kid and you have a mom that, you know, bugs you, but you care about each other.
Right.
And that for me, that's what I kind of took away from the Amal character.
Right. And it's probably a mistake to try to build something more elaborate than that. That just obscures the simple heart of the story. Brett Angel, do you remember wrestling very much with, you know, the kind of the theatrical matters of this?
No, I don't. I remember it being a pretty easy part to put yourself into and project, as Mike and Nathan said. It's it's a pretty natural relationship. I do remember the energy being something that was reinforced in me that you wanted to exude, and there being that dynamic between Amal and his mom of, you know, it's playful, but there's a frustration there between mother and son, which, again, is a pretty natural phenomenon. But it was also an inspirational point for those two and for the three kings that have been mentioned, you know, in this biblical story. So it had to be significant enough, and there'd be enough energy there to leave a lasting impression, I think, on the other characters. I just remember that being one thing that we wanted to enforce.
Mm-hmm. Ty, how about you? What are you up there on stage just kind of being yourself, or do you think a lot about who was Amal and what is this character all about?
I kind of like combine me and the character Amal together. Like my humor at the funny parts, but then like his sad and like his like happy at his parts. But like, you know what I mean? Like just together.
Yeah, that makes sense, because Amal is not you, and yet he's probably part of you. There are parts of you that are in Amal, or parts that are very similar. What about the interesting challenge of playing, he's called a crippled boy in the course of the score. Do you remember wrestling very much with the crutch and trying to be persuasive as a little crippled boy?
Yeah, I can answer this one.
This is Nathan.
Yeah, I had done that before, you know, when you're make-believing in your house when you're little, you know, acting. I remember watching the show Newsies and seeing Crutchy with that crutch, and I thought that was so, I don't know why, I just thought that was so cool. So I remember, like, going out and getting a stick and playing around with that. I did things like that. So when I knew I was able to be on a crutch, I was like, oh, I got to nail this. I remember thinking that. So I really liked the crutch because it added something else tangible that I could do that I knew, oh, this was acting. This was something that I could pinpoint. This is something that I would do on stage that was acting. And so I remember being really into the crutch and trying to get that to work really well. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun for me.
How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, having an object on stage can be really reassuring and make you feel more comfortable. I remember just, like, when I first started using the crutch, we didn't have a towel around it, I don't think, and it started to hurt my armpit. So I think I was going a little bit too in and really trying to use it as a crutch.
Going for it.
But then we reinforced it with some towel, and it was great. It was a great crutch.
It worked. How about you, Brett?
Yeah, I totally agree with Mike. I think especially for a young performer, having a prop, having something physical, something you can hold on to for comfort, but also just utilize throughout your performances is helpful. And, you know, because it's something that is involved in every scene, you know, throughout the play, throughout the opera, right up until the end, it's there. It's reassuring. So I think, and maybe that was unspoken because that's part of the role to begin with, but I do think that was helpful, especially when you're younger.
Hmm. And that's been an interesting challenge for you, isn't it, Ty, to try to look like you are really a lame little boy, I mean, who needs a crutch. Has that been a challenge?
Actually, yes, because I used to, like, watch, like, old, like, Charlie Chaplin and, like, stuff like that sometimes, and I'd see him with, like, the little canes, and I used to think that they really weren't putting that much weight under it. And Grandpa's like, no, you got more weight off your leg. Like, oh.
Okay.
I did the same thing. No.
Yeah, got to listen to your director about that, don't you? Let's talk for a moment about the really interesting relationship between Amal and the mother. And I guess as much as I'm interested not only in the relationship between those two characters, but also the relationship or connection that you maybe remember having with whatever woman was portraying your mother in your particular performances of Amal. And in some cases, maybe it's too long ago for you to even remember that. But I wonder if you could just say a word about the connection between Amal and his mother, and maybe in conjunction with that, your connection, you yourself as performing Amal with whoever was performing the mother opposite you.
Yeah.
Nathan again?
Yeah, I remember, I think I had two mothers that switched off in both performances. The Sura sisters, Aaron Sura and Brianna. Brianna Sura. Mm-hmm.
And Brianna is the mother this weekend.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. I remember being on stage with them and acting with them, and they were very mother-like. to me as well. Like I really got that kind of a vibe from them when I was on stage, and it felt really natural too. I remember in some of the scenes, you know, where Amal's singing to the mother, reassuring her, and then, you know, they hug, and I remember like kind of getting chills. I was like really getting into the character, but yeah, the relationship between Amal and his mother, I think, is a really beautiful thing because it shows like a genuine example of what love is, and a true love between a mother and a son is something that's timeless and really beautiful. And I wasn't necessarily aware of that when I was 10, but I got some sort of a little taste of that. It was a really good experience.
Very good.
For me, I think you mentioned her name. I think it was Beth Bush was my mother,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were totally, just like basically coworker kind of things. I can just remember being extremely professional and extremely talented. And on stage, I remember feeling more of a motherly kind of connection with her. So I think when we performed, we were really good. We had a good relationship on stage. And I don't know. I feel like the story, at least there's the external stress on the relationship of poverty, and that kind of creates the frustration between the mother and the child. But you know, you can obviously in the end, you know, they love each other, and that's what, you know, it's just like the, you know, cliche, they love each other and it's all good.
They really do, but love each other. It's very deep.
It was really interesting to see the, you know, I didn't think about this until now, but yeah, having the external stress of poverty and how it kind of was driving a wedge in between Amal and the mother, and it makes Amal do things that he wasn't supposed to do, and you know, so.
Well, right, and of course, part of it is Amal is trying to create some joy out of a life that has a lot of hardship in it, and the mom is probably trying to shield him from that as much as possible, but it's they're bearing some really heavy loads. How about you, Brett? What are your recollections of whoever portrayed your mother and your connection with her?
Well, I remember the relationship between the characters is imperfect, right? And I think that's what makes it fun, and that's what makes it easier to relate to. And again, when you're young, that's the more natural side of it. I mean, I have terrific parents, but I did plenty of things when I was that age to frustrate them. And I think that, again, is what made it easier to become familiar with the role. I mean, I just remember having other performers on stage with me that made my life very easy, and you were one of those people, Greg. So you were involved in that 91 production. But everyone having fun, everyone smiling, you know, in between takes. And, you know, I think when you're working with people that are more experienced than you are, and just you can trust them to give you some advice on a point here or there, or, you know, the people who maybe understand those more subtle themes of the play, like Michael was mentioning about, you know, the poverty having this impact on the relationship. You don't think about that, again, when you're 10, but if you just listen to the other people that have some experience that understand what's going to bring out the best in the character, I think that'll come through. So that made it easier on me. And, you know, the woman who played my mother in the 91 production, she was certainly part of that.
Right. Your mother, as a matter of fact, was a woman by the name of Ilona Kombrink, who taught at Madison for many, many years, a very distinguished voice teacher, and actually somebody who knew Giancarlo Menotti personally. And so she brought an exceptional wealth of experience to the table. So you were fortunate to sing opposite her, and all of you
and wise to listen to her advice. Probably.
Right, and all of you were really blessed to have great mothers in these productions. One of my memories of interviewing Michael, Mike Weideberg, back when he was Amal, was when I asked him what his favorite moment in the score was, and he said it was the moment when he fights with the page. So this is this moment when Amal's mother goes after some of the gold that she sees sitting there Just thinking about the way in which she can change Amal's life for the better if she can just take a little bit of that. And she's caught by the page who sings out thief. And then, of course, Amal begins beating on the page, saying, "Don't you dare, don't you dare, don't you dare hurt my mother." So what about the fight, gentlemen? I bet that was an interesting challenge.
I didn't even remember that part until you brought it up this morning. I was like, really, that was my favorite part? I thought my favorite part was when Mr. McKinney, who played one of the kings with the box, sang his song, because he was so animated, and he had such a good voice, and I got to eat a little piece of licorice, I think, at the end of it.
That's right.
Yeah, and I just totally, that's like one of the most memorable parts for me, just because Mr. McKinney was amazing.
Absolutely. I remember that vividly.
Yeah, I was actually going to say the same thing. That was my, when I was on the show, I said that was my favorite part with the box. And working, Mr. McKinney was also the king of the box, too, in my production. So, yeah, but yeah, I remember, yeah, you know, when you brought it up, now it became clear, fighting with the page. That was a lot of fun. Because, you know, when you're a 10-year-old kid, you want to, you know, you like to roughhouse. But
and not get yelled at for it.
Exactly, yeah. Being told to do it, you know, hit him in the, that was great.
Hit him harder.
Yeah, but I remember there being, you know, because that's, you know, one of the pinnacles of the show. I remember being there a lot of intensity there, especially seeing it from the mother, too. You see that, I remember seeing the look on Aaron Sir's face, too, when that was happening. I was like, whoa. It was really powerful. I remember the intensity being there.
Mm. How about you, Brett?
I remember enjoying the parts in general that the kings were involved, and I don't remember which of the kings that Mr. McKinney played with the other guys, but Steve Samuelson was involved in our production back in 1991, and I just remember him having a terrific humor and doing some things that were tremendously funny. And that was, you know, visually it was fun to do things with the kings because, you know, Amal is a poor boy with a crutch and, you know, wearing drab colors and very inexpensive clothes, and the kings are the antithesis of that, right? I mean, they have the bright colors and the fancy clothes and the gifts that they bring, and I just remember liking that interplay and doing the back and forth between them.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes for some delicious play. Ty, what is your favorite moment in the score? Do you have one favorite?
Actually, same part with the other two, the box, because my grandpa's like, you're not going to eat anything like when you're doing this because it affects your singing.
Right.
So literally at the very end, he's like, I didn't know what was going on. Like, you know, it was the end, pretend to eat some. He literally gave me a stick of licorice. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, right. Yep, he's got a big bag of it right there in the box. So that's good. Jim, I want you to say a quick word about one of the really most wonderful components of this performance this weekend, namely some marvelous dancers who are doing the Shepherd's Dance.
The Classical Dance Arts Studio of Southeastern Wisconsin, I'm not sure their formal title, but I know they're Racine Kenosha Connected, is a wonderful ballet company. I'll just say we've never had anything like this in our area. Two professional ballet dancers who are running a professional company. These are young kids, all the way from 4 years old when they're doing preparatory work up through high school, where some of their young people are getting ready to pursue careers in dance. This is a remarkable troupe, and Mark and Linda do a spectacular job of preparing the young people for this. So we have three dancers from the troupe that are going to be part of this production. I can't wait for the audience to see them. They're brilliant.
They really, truly, truly are. Here's just a little taste of the Shepherd's Dance music.
Different for me too, because the last time, a couple times, we had a folk group dance, and they were very nice. They really did a great job.
But this is ballet, professional.
This is really spectacular.
Yes, it's quite amazing. Absolutely, absolutely. The moment, of course, of the great miracle in Amal and the Night Visitors is that incredible moment when Amal extends his crutch, saying. The mother says, I wish I had a gift that I could send also to this child. and Amal offers up his crutch, and in that moment of selflessness, suddenly finds himself able to walk. I want us to just listen to a few moments of this amazing moment from the score and then have our Amals talk about this.
I walk, Mother.
He walks. He walks. He walks.
I hope this is bringing back memories for our Amals. What is your recollection of this moment in the score?
Yeah, this was a very powerful moment. It was another moment where I got chills, even on stage, because it starts out so slow, you know, with the kind of thumping of the bass. It's very epic. It's so wonderful in of itself. You know, it's the miracle of the show.
It really, really is.
Yeah, and I love that it's out of, you know, Amal's selflessness. He's not even thinking about it. He's just, take my crutch. Mm. And then this miracle happens. It's a really significant picture.
It's really incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I recall the score is just amazing. And how it's eked out a little bit. Like, yeah, the moment's pretty quick, but they really eke out that he's walking,
which
I remember being like, I had to like remember to be slow about it because I was just so excited about the whole thing happening.
Yeah, you have to almost tamp down your own excitement. Brett, you like that moment too?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm listening to all the excerpts. I'm getting excited to come back on Friday and see the performance. Yeah. I haven't watched the performance, you know, that I was in, I can't tell you in how long, probably, you know, within the year after we did it. And I haven't been back to see a second performance. So, I mean, this is great to be reminded of all the different moments and the specifics and the details in the performance, you know, that we all got to be a part of. Mm. And I think we will, you know, I know I will personally appreciate more after seeing them again and being reminded of what it was like.
Right. So there are performances tomorrow night and Saturday night and at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine, and then explain the presence of these four Amals tomorrow night.
I can't wait for that. I think one of the more interesting opportunities is not only this wonderful opera with these memorable tunes, but also to have an opportunity for the audience to talk back a little bit like we have today about what it meant to play this role and how coming into a role like this at such a young age can really change your perspective of how the arts can impact a life. And, you know, a tour.